How are you?
Okay.
Yeah, you know, singing that last song reminded me of a good friend and that I used to work with. He still works at Xerox, and we used to see each other and just say, "Hey, how you doing?" You know, we'd see each other for a little bit of time, and then we'd see each other and say, "Hey, Nate, how you doing?" He says, "God's still on the throne." You know, even though we're having one of them kind of mediocre days, you know, God's still on the throne. He's still powerful. He's still mighty. He's still kind. His essence don't change because our emotions change, you know, or our feelings change. His essence just stays constant. You know, so it's good to belong to a God that is never changing. When we, so in Daniel 4 tonight, but, you know, when we look at Daniel, you go back a little bit because it's been a little bit, but been a little while here. We last time we looked at Daniel 3, and we ended up seeing the three boys there, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, right? They were tested beyond most of our testing that we'll ever, ever, ever experience. We probably will experience some testing in our life, whether it's with that magnitude of being put in a situation that is physically and seemingly hopeless, right? Being thrown in the midst of the fire and coming out. And, you know, as Bob was talking tonight just about the man that is over in Iran that has been taken in, the pastor, that continues to stand, continues to stay steadfast in his faith and his love for God and doesn't back down from him, as a picture of today's modern Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And how, when we get in those positions, what is our reaction? How are we going to handle that time, that moment that we have? Are we going to allow the flames to upset us? Are we going to allow our eyes to see something and not go forward because it is harmful physically for us or seemingly death row, you know, to us? Seems like a hopeless situation, but somehow we need to endure. So how do we do that? You know, how do we purpose within us? How do we ask the Lord, you know, "Lord, you know, purpose within us." That's what we need to do. Purpose within our hearts, Lord, that we'll stay steadfast in love with you no matter what, no matter what the fire. And it proves to be a life-changing moment for Nebuchadnezzar. Not so much for the guys, because if the guys went into that, they were pretty faithful. It didn't change their, you know, faith because God rescued them from it. It just strengthened their faith. It didn't drastically change them. So I think as we look at Nebuchadnezzar now, there's a man that has his eyes opened again, right? He sees that that these guys that had honored the Lord, the mighty God of Israel, has now saved them from the fire, even in Babylon, outside the in the captivity. The Lord somehow gets there, and somehow he just does it, you know, outside of our understanding and means to even understand. God does it. Nebuchadnezzar, in the latter portion of that scripture, he acknowledges God. He says there is a God. But he doesn't know him yet, you know. He just acknowledges his power, you know. And James even tells us that even the demons believe, right? So just because somebody says, "I believe that God has that power," doesn't mean that they know him. They know of him. They acknowledge his presence, maybe, but they don't necessarily know him. And we can stand in that place where we say, well, we know of him, or we have knowledge of him, or perhaps we know people that do that, you know, but they don't know him. There is no personal relationship with the Lord that he's able to, you know, because if I have a personal relationship with my wife, right? And what she says to me, I listen to, and I intently listen to, and I say, should I do that, right? It's a relationship there that I respect. And with the Lord, when he shows us his power, we say, wow, and we just don't go, wow, because that's what the world does. They go, wow, did you see that? That guy got healed. Wow. Must have been an awesome kind of power that did that. But we say, wow, that was an awesome, powerful thing that the Lord did. Wonder what he could do with me, you know? Hey, Lord, could you do this for me, in me, you know? And this power can change our lives. And Nebuchadnezzar wasn't there yet. He wasn't there yet. And he needed to be humbled in order to be there. So he even sets out a decree to the people. He said, Bob, you're going to believe. You're going to believe in this God, okay? And you're supposed to believe, right? But it's not a heartfelt belief, right? We don't go, you know, we don't all of a sudden, because my wife says, have a relationship with this guy over here, that, you know, that I'm going to have that relationship with that guy, you know, or that friendship. Hey, go have this friendship with... A decree is just, you know, kind of a threat or a way of telling somebody what to do. But when it comes past that decree where we're like, hey, you know, we want to have this relationship. We want to have this friendship. You know, that's what the Lord wants from us. He wants us to want to have a relationship with him, not just believe that he exists. So when we start out in this chapter 4, Nebuchadnezzar the king, to all people, nations, and language, to all people, nations, languages that dwell in all the earth, peace be multiplied to you. I thought it good to declare the signs and wonders that the Most High God has worked for me. How great are his signs and how mighty his wonders. His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and his dominion is from generation to generation. So when we first read into this, we just got done reading about, and I just got done telling you that Nebuchadnezzar didn't have a relationship with him. But if you read through this, he starts to pick out some things here that perhaps you get the picture of, perhaps he did have a relationship with him. Well, that didn't make sense, because the dream that we're gonna go through here, we're shown pretty vividly that he had denied the Lord, and he had had a prideful heart and did the things of his own way, and then denied the Lord, denied the power of God, and esteemed himself higher than him. So what do we have here? Well, it's like me walking up to you and saying, let me tell you something. Let me tell you my testimony. Let me tell you what the Lord has done in my life. I want you to understand how powerful he is, how awesome he is, right? I'm going to give you my testimony, and I'm going to tell you that, how he changed my life, how he brought me down to my knees, how he humbled me, and how he changed my heart. And I believe that's what was happening here, is because as we will find that chapter 4, at the end of chapter 4, we'll find a similar message. But I think it's a testimony. You know, somehow Daniel, as we'll find, Daniel loved this king. I really think he did. Because he would have kept a tight upper lip if it wasn't for this king, as far as telling him his dreams. He had a heart for those that were lost. And Daniel wanted this man to know the God that he knew. And so I think Daniel specifically put this in here as a testimony so that Nebuchadnezzar, so to share what the Lord did to a man that was stone cold, that was hard as a rock, that had no had acknowledgement of the Lord, but had no relationship with him. So as we pick up here in verse 4 here, I want you to notice as we read through these next few verses, I want you to notice the pronoun that's used the most, or the pronouns that are used the most. And it'll tell you something about Nebuchadnezzar. It says, I, Nebuchadnezzar, was at rest in my house and flourishing in my palace. I saw a dream which made me afraid, and the thoughts of my bed and the visions of my head troubled me. Therefore, I issued a decree to bring in all the wise men of Babylon before me, that they might make known to me the interpretation of the dream. Then the magician, the astrologer, the Chaldean, the soothsayers came in and I told them the dream, but they did not make known to me its interpretation. I think if you look through here, it's pretty obvious, you know. Nebuchadnezzar felt kind of left out. If you look at his name, Nebuchadnezzar, there's not one place in there that you'll find an I, right? And he felt like he needed to put an I into everything, you know. And he had an eye problem. He could see very well, but he had this problem where, and we all had it. If we don't have it today, we've had it in the past. If we don't have it, if we don't have had it in the past and we don't have it today, we'll have it in the future. It's a guarantee that we're going to have an eye problem during our life, right? To some degree, he had a bad eye problem. As you'll notice in verse 4 here, he says, I, Nebuchadnezzar, was at rest in my house and flourishing in my palace. See, it was all his. He had owned it all. He owned everything. And he took that possession and he made it his own, right? I think Sunday I had said that, you know, it's a lot easier to give God stuff away, right? It's a lot easier if we give God ownership of our stuff. And it's even better if we give ownership of our lives to the Lord. They're His anyways, right? It's just, hey, Lord, you know, take control of it. Allow Him to take control of it. And that's a hard thing to do because we're sinful and we just don't like to give up our position. And I think that was Nebuchadnezzar's problem. If you had asked Nebuchadnezzar at the time of this dream what was his plans, right? His plans was not to give up things. His plans was not to give in to another ruler. His plans was to rule the world, right? As we look at a lot of these leaders that we've seen in the history, Mussolini, Napoleon, Alexander the Great, what was their mission? What did they declare as their purpose? Their purpose was not to serve their people, but to serve themselves ultimately. Though Nebuchadnezzar here, we'll find out, was a very a good ruler in a sense. Everybody lived. It was a great economy. It was a great economy to live in, but he was very self-centered. Everything was his. And then we saw his fluxes and his mood swings, and you know, we've seen that where he's pretty happy with folks, and you know, they're telling him his dreams, and then all of a sudden he's really mad at them because they're not telling the dreams. And one time he gives them the whole dream, and the next time he doesn't say a word, and he just wants everything from the dream all the way to the interpretation. So you see these kind of fluxes in this. Why? Because it's all about me. That's how we get. Think about ourselves when we get angry and how we react. I know when I react, I can tell when it's me. You know, when it's me, it's like I don't get my way, then I'm mad. You know, things don't go my way, all of a sudden I'm mad at things and people, you know. So I can tell. But it's interesting here that he's troubled by this dream in verse 5, right? He says it's troubling. This is troubling. I'm afraid. And the thoughts on my bed and the visions of my head trouble me. You know, I had somebody this week say to me, you know, we were sitting around a conference room and we were getting ready to have a meeting. Our boss kind of tricked us to having this meeting. And it was kind of funny. We got this note on Friday that said, mandatory meeting. Oh, no. We're in trouble, you know. It's either we're in trouble because we didn't meet some targets, right? Or there's going to be layoffs. I mean, you know, you kind of put it all together, or he's leaving kind of thing. So everybody was trying to, you know, beforehand, I get in Monday morning, I'm like, hey, you know, another meeting, maybe there'll be a layoff, I can take it. You know, so I was kind of excited about it. I know everybody else around me, they don't know anything, right? They're just kind of, you know, they're not so excited. But we had the meeting, and my boss came in, and it was somebody's birthday, and he brought bagels. And, but everybody, I'm telling you, everybody was troubled by it. Because people would come, I got in, man, it wasn't good morning, Fred. Hey, how's your weekend? Good morning. Did you have a good weekend? You know, that's usually the thing. Hey, did you watch that football game? Did you watch the Bills finally go down and the Jets, you know. We won't talk about them. I'm not bringing it up. So, but, you know, the first thing was, Fred, what do you think is in this meeting to this morning? Why do you think he's bringing us? It was just his staff, you know, the five of us. What do you think is going to happen? No clue. You know, I really didn't. I had some thoughts myself, but I wasn't really troubled by it. But here, you know, as Nebuchadnezzar was, they were troubled by it. And even though, during that meeting, as we sat around and we chatted a little bit, they were talking about the lottery and winning the lottery and whatnot, you know. Boy, I wish we could win the lottery. So, you know, I work in a kind of a statistical setting, right? So all these managers are sitting around, well, you know, those that win the lottery, you know, so many percent of them never, you know, after 5 years, they don't have any money and da-da-da and all this. And most of them are happy. Some, a lot of them turn to drug abuse. Some of them get put in prison because they run out of money, but they have all these bills now, you know. So there's a lot of theft or whatever. And one of the girls said, boy, but I would like to try. I would like to see how it feels to have that money. The funny thing is that Nebuchadnezzar, at this time, point in time, he had everything. He had control of everything. There was nothing that wasn't underneath his hand, right? Yeah, he was troubled by a dream. Give me a break, right? Why was he troubled? Well, because he had a lot. He had a lot on the table, right? And sometimes when we have a lot on a table, why do you think people were worried coming into that meeting on Monday morning? Because they had a lot on the table, right? They had all their benefits, they had all their salary, they had their double incomes, now it's single incomes. They had their houses that were overtaxed and overspent for. They had two cars and a motorcycle, right? They had a lot on the table. That's why they're a little nervous, right? And so, you know, Nebuchadnezzar here, he's a little nervous. He might lose it all, you know. So that's a tough position to be in. And as we know, he was a lot of people thought he had hysteria, where he just, you know, went from one mood swing, to the next, and you saw this in a lot of leaders back then. Why? Because they had a lot on the table. They had a lot to lose, right? Especially when you think that you're the number one in the world. You're it. You've made all this happen for yourself. There's a lot of pride involved, and you're going to lose it all. And so they have a lot on the table. And you might have heard of the man, the rich man, that went to sleep every night. He slept on his bed, and every night, you know, he woke up in the middle of the night And he thought somebody was underneath his bed, hiding underneath his bed, and he thought that the guy was going to come out and take all his riches. So he went to the psychiatrist, right? And he said, you know, I'm having this problem. I'm having a problem sleeping at night, you know? So the psychiatrist gave him some prescriptions and he gave him some therapy, you know, and sent him away. And he didn't see the guy for like 3-4 weeks. And so he ran into, in a, on the street, he ran into him on the street one time and he said, hey, you know, so what I said to you helped? He said, no. He said, okay, the medication that I gave you, help you sleep? He said, no. He said, well, what happened? He said, are you sleeping? He said, yeah, I'm sleeping now. He said, well, what happened? What caused you to fall asleep? And he said, well, a carpenter came over and he cut the legs of my bed off. And now nobody can get underneath my bed. See, there was... And I think that's what we need to do, too. We need to call the carpenter over, right? Jesus. And we need to say, Lord, you know what? Whatever you have to do to us to change us, I need you to cut the legs of my bed off. I need you to change me. I need to get rid of these things in my life that confuse me, these things that drive me not to you. I need to be driven to the Lord, right? He is our helper. He is our provider. He is our Jehovah Jireh. In verse 7, he calls the magicians and the astrologers, the Chaldeans and the soothsayers. Does this sound familiar? It should, because he did it once before. Right? He did it once before. Did they do anything for him? No, they didn't do anything for him. They didn't tell him his dream, and he even made it easier here. He told them the dream, and they still couldn't tell them the interpretation. But that's how we are too, right? Something doesn't work, we do it again, right? I remember in college, right? Some drunken days in college, and you get up, you hug the porcelain god for a little while, you know? And then the next day you do it all over again. Why is that? Why do we act like dogs sometimes? Why do we do things that are animalistic, you know, kind of thing? Why don't we turn to the Lord? That's the beautiful thing about being God's child, that we have a resource beyond resources. We have somebody that we can go to in the middle of the night when we can't sleep, you know. A lot of times when you can't sleep and you're a Christian, you need to get up and pray, right? You need to just get up and get before the Lord and pray. You know, you need to seek His face. It's a resource that we forget about, the whole prayer resource. Get into prayer and talk to the Lord. But we have a habit of going back to the world to see if the world can solve our problems, right? We get in credit card debt, what do? We go to a counselor, the guy counsels us, and he puts us on this beautiful plan. Instead of paying paying off in 5 years, we're on this 10-year plan. We go through this 10-year plan, and we call up our creditors. We make a special arrangements and everything. We get all our debt figured out, and we pay all our debt off. But then after the 10 years, we go back and we get the credit card out and we spend and we spend and we spend and we get back in debt again. Why is that? Well, we didn't go to the right source for one thing, right? We didn't get it really figured out. We didn't get the problem figured out. We got figured out how to pay the debt off. But the problem wasn't that we had too much debt. The problem was that we spent like crazy, right? Same thing with our sin. You know, if we're dealing with a sin, we got to go to the cross. We can't just think it's going to go away. We can't just take, another road home, in a sense. Because pretty soon that road will get tiring, and we'll get on another road, and guess what? We'll find that sin again. It won't be solved, because we haven't repented from it. We haven't went back to the Lord and asked Him to forgive us. Verse 8. But at last Daniel came before me. Wouldn't you think he would have picked up the phone, if he had a phone, picked up his cell phone and called Daniel and said, "Hey, can you come over? I got another dream. I'm having a difficult time figuring out what the Lord wants me to do here." Wouldn't you think he would have done that? Daniel interpreted the last dream, and Daniel told him the dream and then interpreted it. So you would have thought that he would have done that, but often, as it was with Nebuchadnezzar, it's always the thing we do last that we should have done first. And sometimes with our prayer life, what do? I know how I am. Man, I see something, I go, "Oh, I got to fix that." I go out and I fix it and I get it all right. Well, in my own eyes, but it's really not right, right? What I should have done and knelt before the Lord and asked the Lord to do it. Should have went to Him first. Asked the Lord to do it. But at last Daniel came before me, this name of Belteshazzar, according to the name of my God. In him is the spirit of the holy God. And this tells us something about Nebuchadnezzar, is that he sees a distinction. He sees a distinction between his God and he sees and the real God, right? Daniel's God. So he sees that distinction. And he knows there's a distinction there, but he hasn't accepted that Daniel's God yet. And I told the dream before him, saying, Belteshazzar, chief of the magicians, because I know that the spirit of the holy God is in you, and no secret troubles you. Explain to me the vision of my dream that I have seen and its interpretation. I always think it's amazing when people, you know, I'm sure you've had this happen to you, where somebody looks at you and they're like, "Aren't you upset with this? Why?" You know, and they question why you're not reacting as the world would react, right? Well, it's because our perspective is on the Lord. You know, it's not on these things. These things, you know, somebody said on the radio coming down today, they said, these things all burn anyways, right? All these things that we have, all these things that we put our emphasis on, they all burn. In the end, nothing really lasts except the Lord. But he recognizes that God gives peace to Daniel. And that's a big recognition, I think, of anybody, is that they see that the Lord is a peace giver, you know, and he gives peace to his children. These were the visions of my head while on my bed. I was looking, and behold, a tree in the midst of the earth, and its height was great. The tree grew, became strong. Its height reached to the heavens, and it could be seen to the ends of all the earth. Its leaves were lovely, its fruit abundant. And in it was food for all. The beasts of the field found shade under it. The birds of the heavens dwelt in its branches, and all flesh was fed from it. I saw in the vision of my head while on my bed, and there was a watcher, a holy one, coming down from heaven. And he cried aloud and said thus, "Chop down the tree and cut off its branches. Strip off its leaves and scatter its fruit. Let the beasts get out from under it and the birds from its branches. Nevertheless, leave the stump and roots in the tree, in the earth, bound with a band of iron and bronze, in the tender grass of the field. Let it be wet with dew of heaven, and let him graze with the beasts on the grass of the earth. Let his heart be changed from that of a man. Let him be given the heart of a beast, and let seven times pass over him." So there it was, the dream. And it was in the midst, right? In verse 10, it says it was in the midst of the earth, and it was tall. It was obvious to everybody. Everybody looked at it and said, wow. You know, I think, I can't remember the tree, but Hannah was showing us her a presentation of her, of a project that she did for homeschool, and she, it was about a tree. How tall was that tree, Hannah? 100 feet. That's a big tree. There's a tree right next to us, right where the house is. And it's got funny leaves on it. What's it called, Hannah? Ginkgo? Ginkgo. I don't know. I can't hear you. But it's a weird looking tree. You know, it's got like half leaves on it. And it grows tall. And it was pretty obvious to us when we looked at that tree. We went, wow, this is kind of different and strange. And it was tall, you know. So you kind of take notice of something like that. So it was something that was in the midst of the earth, and it was noticeable. The whole earth could see it. And in verse 12, it said its leaves were lovely. That's one thing we noticed about this tree, huh, Hannah? We looked at its leaves, and, you know, we were coming from a land where our land has beech trees on it. You know what a beech tree is, right? With beech nuts. And a lot of beech trees, right? So we looked at, and it's pretty ordinary leaf, you know, kind of oval leaf. But we looked at this tree and went, wow, kind of took notice of it. Said, wow, that's purity, that's beautiful. And it was abundant in fruit. It said it could feed all the earth. And we get the picture here of what, you know, this tree, obviously, as Daniel will get into it, is exactly Nebuchadnezzar. But it was beautiful. It supplied the food of the land. And obviously, when that happens, everybody's happy, right? I mean, I remember this year we had some fruit trees back home, and we looked out and we saw some blossoms on the trees, which was kind of normal. But as the days went by, we saw some pears come to the tree, and we thought, ah, this is the first year that we've got fruit on the tree and we're leaving. But that's kind of it's funny with the way it works for us, you know, is God will bring us at our other house before we moved to Stanley in Geneva area there. Karen had this weeping cherry that just blossomed one spring, then we moved. It's kind of the, you know, that's what happens to us. The Lord blesses us and then we move, you know, and that's okay. As long as it's His plan. It says that in verse 13, it says that I saw a vision of my head, which on my pillow, and there was a watcher, a holy one, coming down from heaven. Right? God comes down. He tells us, here he tells Nebuchadnezzar, but he tells us things too. He instructs us. He brought this word to us from heaven. And we should take it and say, wow, you wrote this for us, Lord? And, you know, we should desire this just as much as Nebuchadnezzar would desire this dream to come to, you know, to understand it and know it. We should come to look at His word as, wow, Lord, you have given us this instruction. Why would God give us instruction? Well, the purpose of instruction is so you don't get hit by the car, you know, right? Don't go out in the road, you know. How can we be blessed, or how can we flourish? How can we prosper? By listening to the Lord's instructions. Verse 15, nevertheless, leave the stump. So, chop it down. Remember, he was given the instruction to chop it down. Why would you chop down a beautiful tree? That seemed to be a little opposite what I would do. You know, I took a lot of pride in my little forest with 20 acres that I used to have, right? Or that I still kind of have. And it has a lot of dead trees in it, right? I took pride in that, to go in and actually clean out the dead stuff. I never really sawed down a live tree there until I needed to open up our lawn. But why would you cut down a beautiful tree? You look up at a tree and it's all flourishing and there's fruit on it. It's kind of contrary to what you would do, right? It was feeding everybody. But the Lord, in this dream, would tell him to cut it down. Nevertheless, leave the stump. The stump? Isn't the stump pretty useless after the tree's down? Why leave the stump? And the roots of the tree, bound with a band of iron and bronze in the tender grass of the field, let it be wet with the dew of heaven. And it says, let him graze with the beasts. Let who? Let the tree graze with the beasts in the grass of the earth. Let his heart be changed from that of a man. Let him be given the heart of a beast, and let seven times pass over him. So that was, it's a transition point here, right? Where there's some clues here about, well, this tree is turning from an it to a him, you know? He's starting to talk a little personal to Nebuchadnezzar through this dream and trying to wake him up, you know? A man to the beast. Verse 16 there says, let him be given the heart of a beast. And it's kind of, you know, that whole let. God's allowing it to happen. He's allowing the man to become a beast. You know, could he stop it? Yeah, he could stop it. But why would he? Right? Why would he stop this man from becoming what he's really aiming for, you know, through his pride? Verse 17, and decision is by the decree of the watchers, and the sentence by the word of the Holy One, in order that the living may know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men, gives it to whomever he will, and sets over it the lowest of men. So this, why would God do such a thing to a man? Why would he allow a man to go from a man to a beast? Well, it was for this. It was for, it says that the Most High rules. It's to get the attention to say, who is in control here? Who is in control? Is it you, Nebuchadnezzar? Or is it me? You know, and that's really the grace of God. Right? We don't look at it that way. We look at it misery when we're going through afflictions and stuff. We're looking at things in a different eye, in a sense, right? We're looking through different glass. But God looks at it and he says, no, this is my grace. I am doing this for you, right? He chastens who he loves. He wants to draw you closer to him. And it's hard for a prideful man to be drawn to a holy God. Verse 18, and this dream I, Nebuchadnezzar, had seen, now you, Belteshazzar, declare its interpretation, since all wise men of my kingdom are not able to make known to me the interpretation. But you are able. The spirit of the holy God is in you. So he says, make known, because I know that you know. Why? Because I know that you know the Holy God. You know the source of truth. You have the power because you know this God. So he understands. But Daniel also, you know, here in verse 19, it says, then Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, was astonished for a time, and his thoughts troubled him. So it was a different troubling though. It wasn't trouble, oh no, I'm going to be dust, right? It was a trouble of, oh no, you know, this king is in big trouble. This king is going to take a big whooping from the Lord, and I got to tell him. right? He wasn't afraid. He wasn't afraid that he might get treated by the king. He was afraid to give him the bad news. Isn't it always easy to go up to somebody and say, you know, you won the lottery, right? I was watching a special last night in between flipping back and forth baseball games. You know, I watched some of the Arizona game, and I wasn't really that interested, so I was kind of flipping back and forth between channels, and I noticed that on another station they were doing a special on the Cubs. Remember the Chicago Cubs that had it all that one year? And everybody thought the curse was lifted, right? They were going to win this final game, and they were going to go to the World Series. Remember that? I think it was 1905 or 7 or something like that. I can't remember what the date was exactly. So they get up. They're counting outs. They got 5 more outs. They go to the World Series. Right? It's the 5th game, right, of the series. So whoever wins takes it all. And by the way, it's in Chicago. They got the best pitcher in baseball, and he's pitching that night. They start him up. He's going to get him there. So he lets one fly, and this guy hits it. Everybody looks at it and goes, foul ball, right? And they watch the ball. I don't know if you remember this, but it goes right down the third base line, and it's in play. And it goes, and the outfielder goes up into the stands to catch the ball, right? And this one kid reaches out and touches it. And I got to remember why I brought this up. That's a good question. But anyways, it was a good story. So I'll finish it. How's that? But this ball goes on. This kid grabs a hold of it, and it almost ruined his life. Right? Everybody hated him. It was crazy. I thought to myself, is it really that important? Sometimes we sit around and we go, is what I'm mad at really that important? What I'm upset at, is it really that important? You know? And sometimes we got to sit back and say, you know, it's really not, you know? But as Daniel here understood the impact of what this dream was, he was saddened. Just as those fans understood the impact, that's where I was going, of this ball going in. It was in play, the kid grabs it, and guess what? The Cubs lose. 5 outs. They lost, I think, something like 8-3 or something like that. They kept scoring. They just went to pieces. But understanding the impact, and sometimes for us, what is, you know, when we see something like this and we see sin in somebody's life, it's hard to go up and confront that sin, isn't it? It's hard to go up to somebody and say, you know what? You're in sin. You know what? You're being disobedient to God. But you know what? The Bible calls us sometimes to do that. It's not the easiest thing to do. I always like going up and giving the good news. It's a baby boy. Congratulations, right? But sometimes, you got to give the bad news. You got to say how it is, you know. And that's just the way it is, especially with sin, you know. It's not to be hurtful, but it's to restore the brother, the scripture tells us. So the king spoke and said, Belteshazzar, do not let the dream or its interpretation trouble you. Belteshazzar answered and said, my lord, may the dream concern those who hate you, and its interpretation concern your enemies. He was like, I'd rather see your enemies get this than you. You know, this shows that Daniel really loved this king. For whatever reason, he loved him. Nebuchadnezzar was a knucklehead. He saw the miracles of God, yet he never turned to him. You know, at this point anyways. He would never turn to him. He was full of pride, but Daniel somehow loved him. How was that possible? Well, he loved him because God loved him first and foremost. Right? Even though we look at Daniel, we say, wow, he's a pretty cool character. Right? I'm sure Daniel looked at it and goes, I'm glad God saved me. Right? I want to give this to somebody else. I want to love people. I want to love the sinner. I want to bring that sinner to Christ. Verse 20, and the tree that you saw, which grew and became strong, whose height reached to the heavens, and which could be seen by all the earth, whose leaves were lovely and its fruit abundant, in which it was food for all, under which the beasts of the field dwelt, and in those branches the birds of the heavens had their homes. It was a wonderful tree. It is you, O King, who has grown and become strong, and for your greatness has grown and reached to the heavens, and your dominion to the ends of the earth. You know, you look at this Nebuchadnezzar, as we looked at the metallic image, right, was the head. He was the supreme. He was the one empire that was great. This even says that the top of the tree hit the heavens. How much farther than the heavens can you go? That's as far as you can go. To that heavens, right? How it says here that reached to the heavens and your dominion to the ends of the earth. How far can you go? Far past the ends of the earth can you go? You can't go any further. It's as far as you can go. Right? So he was powerful. But there's something wrong here. Verse 23, and inasmuch as the king saw the watcher, a holy one, coming down from heaven and saying, chop down the tree and destroy it, but leave the stumps and roots, the earth bound with a band of iron and bound in the tender grass of the field. Let it be wet with the dew of heaven, and let him graze with the beasts of the field till seven times pass over him. This is the interpretation, O King, and this is the decree of the Most High, which has come upon my Lord the King. From a standpoint of verse 20 through 22, you would think that the king would be pretty elated. Wow, you know, he said all these nice things about me. I reached to the heavens and I spanned the earth and my dominion was over the ends of the earth. But when he got done with verse 24, it was a different story. He had a different conclusion. From reaching to the heavens to not reaching at all, and the tree would be cut down, would be chopped down, and it would be a decree of the Most High. And that word decree is used a couple times here in Daniel, and it's in reference to the sentence of God. It's God's sentence on Nebuchadnezzar. It's not used anywhere else like that in the Bible. You know, when we looked at decrees from Nebuchadnezzar, different story. Them decrees went to pass, right? There came a point when Nebuchadnezzar didn't hold up his bargain. He said, you got to worship their God. And he turned around and was still prideful and didn't give in to that God, right? He didn't uphold the decree himself personally. But God's sentence, his decree, the sentence of the Lord, that always holds true. Always holds true. Verse 25, and they shall drive you from men. Your dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field, and they shall make you eat grass like oxen. They shall wet you with the dew of heaven, and seven times shall pass over you, till you know that the Most High rules the kingdom of men and gives it to whomsoever he chooses. And inasmuch as they gave the command to leave the stump and the roots of the trees, your kingdom shall be assured to you, after you come to know that heaven rules. So men would drive him out of his kingdom. He would go out into the field. He would eat with the ox here. The dew of heaven, it says that they shall wet you with the dew of heaven, meaning that he probably didn't have any shelter. He was out there day and he was out there night. You know, the dew comes in the evening, right? So we're out there right now. If we're out there laying on the lawn, we wake up in the morning, we'd probably be wet. Yes? It's the dew of heaven. We wouldn't have any shelter. So he was shelterless, houseless. He didn't have a place. He went from palace to ghetto, in a sense. You know? It's a hard place to be. And not only did he go there, but he did it for 7 years. You know, and that's a long time. There's going to be 7 years of tribulation here on earth at some point. Once the Lord comes back and gathers us up, it'll be a tough situation. We won't have the protection, in a sense, or whoever's left here. I won't be here, but you know, whoever's left here won't have the protection of the Holy Spirit. You know, no, I'll be lifted because the saints won't be here. But the promise here is wonderful. In verse 26, it says that your kingdom shall be assured after you come to know that heaven rules. So that can be in our life, right? Even today, if we don't allow God to rule in our lives, we'll never know this, right? We can get frustrated with life. We can think everything's out to get us. But if we know Christ, if we come to that knowledge where we've let our pride go and we've allowed the Lord to work in our lives, we'll know that heaven rules. Therefore, O king, let my advice be acceptable to you. Break off your sins by being righteous and your iniquities by showing mercy to the poor. Perhaps there may be a lengthening of your prosperity. So Daniel pleads with him. He says, just come to the grips with it that God is in control. That God is the one, you know, that has given you your palace. God is the one that has blessed you. Right? Take away and throw away your pride and allow the Lord to work, and perhaps He'll show you mercy. And you won't have to go through all this stuff that I just told you about. And all this came to pass. This came upon King Nebuchadnezzar at the end of the 12th month. He was walking about the holy palace of Babylon. So, you know, here's the Lord's goodness. He gives us that time. He gives us that time. And we don't know how long that is. Here it was, looks like it was 12 months. So he gave him a length of time. I want you to consider the dream, and I want you to turn to me. I want you to get out of it being prideful. And this is what the king, you know, verse 30, it says, the king spoke, saying, is not the great Babylon that he's got this eye problem, right, again, I have built for a royal dwelling by my mighty power, and for the honor of my majesty. And it says, while the words were still in the king's mouth, a voice fell from heaven, King Nebuchadnezzar, my, my, my. to you is it is spoken, the kingdom has departed from you, and they shall drive you from the men, and your dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field. They shall make you eat grass like oxen, and seven times shall pass over you until you know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives to whom he chooses. That very hour the word was fulfilled concerning Nebuchadnezzar. He was driven from men and ate grass like oxen. His body was wet with the dew of heaven, and his hair had grown like eagle feathers, and his nails like bird claws. It came to be fulfilled that pride would, you know, as Pastor Bob said, pride comes before the fall, right? And it's a terrible fall, right? We see it happening all the time. Pride comes before the fall. We think we're so good. We think we're so righteous that we forget the righteous one, right? We think we can get away with things. We think that we can somehow bargain with God. We think we can not do as he's asked us to do, that we can serve ourselves. And the fall is hard. It is hard, you know. Nebuchadnezzar went from being the top of the heavens to the very, very bottom. Right? To the very, very bottom. And I think it's a warning to us, you know. It's a warning to us that if we have pride in our life, we just need to repent of it. You know, I don't know how many sins are driven by pride, but there's a whole lot of them out there that are just driven by pride. And God is gracious and merciful, and he gives us this window of opportunity. And he says, if you take this window of opportunity that I give you, young, middle-aged, or old, it doesn't really matter. He gives you that window of opportunity. And then once that's gone, we don't know if that'll ever occur again to us. We don't know if that time has gone by and we've neglected the Lord and we've walked away from the Lord and we haven't honored the Lord. We haven't asked him into our hearts. We don't know when that time is, that when the Lord turns his face away from us and never again to give us that opportunity. We don't know that time. We shouldn't play games. We should listen to the Lord. We should take his advice. We should get right with him. But Nebuchadnezzar was a picture of an unrepentant, foolish, prideful heart that drove him to eat with the oxen. He didn't even have a stable to stay in. He didn't even have shelter. He had nothing but the field. For 7 years, he would stay there. Reminds me of the tribulation period. What an awful thing to think, you know. I've had guys say to me, well, if the Lord doesn't take me home in the rapture, I'll stick around. Why would you want to do that? That's like living like this, in a sense. Why would you want to take that chance? When you don't need to. There's no need for that. That we can have assurance that our salvation is sure. You know? We can have that assurance. It's so easy, too. That's what kills you. So easy. And at the end of the time, I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted up my eyes to the heavens, and my understanding returned to me, and I blessed the Most High and praised and honored him who lives forever. For his dominion is an everlasting dominion, and his kingdom is from generation to generation. It's almost like we get the same message in what we started from, right? It was his testimony to us. His testimony of how he went, you know, how he went to the gutters, you know, how he rose to power and how he He grew to power, right? He rose, a tree grows, he rose to power. He was cut down by the Lord. He was chastised to the point of repentance. And he recognized that his kingdom was from generation to generation. I could tell you story after story about, and testimony after testimony of guys that I've known that have, they were good guys, but they were prideful guys. And they went to the point where they had taken themselves, they'd taken their families, they did some foolish things, and then the Lord broke them. Some of them spent time in jail. Some of them died. And is that really worth us keeping our pride the way we have? That we've been storing up our pride like it's some precious treasure when there's only one treasure. You know, the scripture says where your heart is, right? That's where your treasure is going to be. So if your heart is wandering, right? If your heart's wandering and it's not, and you know, you're just taking your eyes off the Lord and you're just doing it for yourself. You're putting yourself in a bad position. A bad position. And you're putting God in a bad position. You know why? Because he never wants to chasten to this degree. I don't think. But you know what? He loves you enough. He'll chasten you right to the end. He'll chasten you to the end. And he has done this in guys that I know. And like I've said before, you know, some guys have told me, I'm glad the Lord did it. I'm glad he chastened me. I'm glad he chastened me to that degree because he proved to me that he loved me. Right? Just like he loved Nebuchadnezzar. Just a couple scriptures for you as we wrap up. But this is from Obadiah chapter 1, verse 3 and 4. It's the coming, you know, he's talking about the coming judgment of Edom. And it says, the pride of the heart has deceived you. You who dwell in the cleft of the rocks, you that hide, basically, whose habitation is high, you who say in your heart, who will bring me down to the ground? Though you ascend as high as the eagle, and though you set your nest among the stars, from there I will bring you down. The Lord will bring us down. Doesn't seem so nice. Doesn't seem so kind. But as we know, the Lord's essence, they're kind. They're forgiving. But sometimes he afflicts us, or sometimes he allows us to crash in order that we can see that he is in control. You know, I think of, as we're on to baseball today, we'll talk a little baseball, right? Not a big baseball fan, but I just know some trivia, right, honey? And so, one of the, Josh Hamilton. Everybody knows Josh Hamilton. He plays for the Texas Rangers. He's an outfielder. He was a superstar, got into drugs, spent his money unwisely. His family left him. He has four kids and a wife. They all left him. God took him to the bottom of the basement. He worked himself up to the minor, from the minor leagues to the big leagues again, to home run hero. And he's a witness out there now. He has a testimony, in a sense. But he didn't have to go that way. He could have took some different routes, but he didn't. Right? Took his eyes off the Lord. Didn't allow the Lord to change his heart. This year, you probably heard that he threw a ball up to a spectator, just a foul ball that he found on the ground. And when he did, the man fell and he died. could break you. That could send you to a place that you didn't want to be. The guy was there with his son to catch that ball. But see, Josh Hamilton has somebody that a lot of baseball players don't have, and a lot of people today don't have, and that's Jesus. He was able to. The other day, he actually caught for the man's son as he threw in the first pitch to the series. How could he do that? You know, a lot of people would say, how could he do that? Well, it was the strength of the Lord. You know, it was the strength of the Lord that did that. And so, the difference between Scott Hamilton of old and Scott Hamilton of new, what's that? Josh, I'm sorry. Why did I say Scott? Is there a Scott? Oh, there you go. That would be pretty funny out on that field, wouldn't it? Especially a little... That's right. Did I say Josh the whole time while I was... Okay, good. So, Josh, the difference... Well, there's definitely a difference between Josh Hamilton and Scott Hamilton, but Josh of old and Josh of new is... The difference there is Christ, right? And the same thing with Nebuchadnezzar. The difference here was Christ. You know, understanding who God is one thing, is one step, right? The acceptance of who God is into our lives, being able to trust that the Creator of the universe knows best. That's what happens, you know. Even though it was a tragic accident for Josh Hamilton, he holds on to that God knew best. Right? That God knew best even through all that. Maybe that little boy someday will be able to tell the story. Have passion for Jesus.